This is Matches Below, and you're watching Citywide Blackout. Justice for all.
Hey everyone, and welcome back to the show. Great to have you here, because for this episode, guys, we are talking once again all things horror. My next guest is known as the pastor of horror or the paranormal pastor. He is a man of faith, but also a man of fear, because he's got a brand new book out called The Tetramit Tapes, a part of his Tetramit Universe series. Ezekiel Kincaid's back on the show. Ezekiel, welcome back, buddy. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Max. I've been excited about coming back on the show since we had this plan. So I am elated to be here and talk about the book and horror and whatever else. I'm all for it.
Oh man, I cannot wait. All right, so let us dive right into this one. So this book, as of recording, is out the very next day on Amazon. It's also been out on Godless for about a week or two, give or take. Certainly great reviews coming back in. But just walk us through what the Tetramit Tapes is all about.
Okay, so Tetramit Tapes takes place in my hometown of Central Louisiana back in 1990. And it follows five 12-year-old boys who just get out of school for summer break. And they are at one of the boys' house in their neighborhood playing a game of backyard football. And their mean, creepy, crotchety old man of a neighbor comes out to the trash can drunk, carrying a bunch of VHS tapes, and ends up dropping them on the ground, makes a big commotion. They kind of get in an argument with him, and the man chunks the VHS tapes in the trash can. So the boys start talking about the history behind the creepy man, whose name is Edgar Craddock. And as they're talking, they begin to get suspicious about what's on the tapes. So when the sun sets and they're covered by darkness, they sneak over to his trash can and grab the tapes. Well, while they're grabbing the tapes, they see something horrifying taking place in the house because one of the kids is dared to look through the window. And so seeing that, they get the courage to view what's on the tapes, and then it leads them down a rabbit hole of investigation of the mystery surrounding Edgar Craddock, the urban legends of occult and cult activity in their small town. And it's horror, so it does not end well. Like, you know how some horror movies, like, they end and they have a happy ending? This one is not one of those. I just put it to you that way.
It would not be fun if it did, honestly. Like, if this had a pleasant ending or one where everyone just kind of managed to survive, I'd be like, man, that's boring.
I know, right? Yeah, a really dark and bleak ending to this one. And when I did this book, so I'm a huge horror movie fan. I absolutely love them, and I think that's because my mom, growing up in the 80s and 90s, she has my whole childhood on VHS from recording everything. And my brother and I used to make our own horror movies and stuff. So that appeal really, really stuck with me. And I'm also a huge fan of coming-of-age horror. And so I decided to mix the two, and the story has a feel like a mashup between Stephen King's The Body, Stand By Me, and the VHS franchise. So I put both those elements in there. And so it's found footage horror in a literary style, because you have what's going on the tapes being written about, and then also towards the end, the boys get a video camera and they're having to film what is going on. So found footage horror, literary style, mixed with that coming of age type of feel and nostalgia from the 80s and the early 90s and the satanic panic.
Oh my
stuff.
God, yeah. I think we talked about this last time too, because your last book was taking place at around that same time period.
Yeah, it takes place in the Tetramet universe. It's this whole horror universe that I have created. And the one we were talking about last time was the Dreadful Death series. And that follows Theodosia Whitfield and was back in the 1800s and is her origin story. She's mentioned in this book as well. I've got Tetramet stories out on Godless. And the way that I did this universe is all the stories connect, but you can pick up any book in any story and start from there and you're not going to be lost.
Oh, so you're not trying to make your own like horror cinematic universe that's going to go on for like 20 years?
I don't know, man. But I wanted to do something more with this than a series. And not that there is chronological order to everything, but I wanted to do it in a way that somebody wouldn't be like, oh crap, man, I got to go all the way back to the beginning and I got to read all this other stuff first before I read this story or it's not going to make sense. I was like, I don't want it to be that way. I want it to be any story, any book that a reader picks up. It's an entry point into the universe and they're not lost. They're going to know what's going on. But then when they go back and read other things, it's going to put more pieces of the puzzle together. So almost kind of like Saw is, you know?
Yeah, I get you. I get you. Okay. Well, there is so much to talk about now. I love this because just like reading about this book, my co-host Curtis and I were saying, this sounds so freaking cool. We cannot wait to check it out because like we both grew up with like found footage movies, like the Blair Witch Project, I believe was kind of the first one. And it just took off from there. Half the horror movies for a long time were all like found footage. And it was cool to see. You mentioned this being, of course, you're a big fan of the found footage style. Any movies that really stick in your mind as like the ones to go with?
I know a lot of people who are horror fans are listening. They've probably seen the VHS franchise, Paranormal Activity, The Visit by M. Night Shyamalan, Chronicle, a lot of those popular ones, which are all good. But some of the lesser known ones that are good, and like Tubi is a goldmine of found footage movies.
Yes, it is.
Some of the ones on there that I've enjoyed, the Gracefield Incident, The Devil's Well. Let's see what else is on there. Grave Encounters 2, Houses October Built. I love the whole Hell House LLC series, which the last one they did, Carmichael Manor. Holy cow, that one is up there as one of my top movies of 2023 and top found footage movies. That one was fantastic. I absolutely adored it.
All right. How about adapting this for the book? How do you take the found footage genre and make it into a literary tool?
That was one of the biggest challenges in doing that. And there's a couple ways that you can do it. What I like to do is when you're switching from the boys putting the VHS tape into what's actually going on the screen, I had them, you know, you set up, okay, they're watching the tape. But then as I'm explaining what's going on the tape, I try to create the atmosphere. I talk about the humming of the VCR. I talk about the static going across the screen. And then I write that little section in present tense. And it's almost like, and sometimes I'll use like little short sentences, especially it'll be like static, camera cuts here, black screen, then, you know, explaining what happened. So what I did in my mind is I sat down and I thought about found footage movies and I thought about the takes, how the camera moves, you know, the lines, the sound and everything, and thought about if I was going to explain a scene from a found footage movie to help somebody really be immersed so they could see it in their mind, how would I do that to make it feel like they are there watching it? So I, you know, that was the one of the most challenging parts of the book that I spent a lot of time on, is making sure that the reader feels that transition from being in the story with the boys to going in the story that's happening on their television screen. So it was a lot of fun. I mean, you know, you're a writer, like, we get those things that challenge us and push us, and it stokes that fire and that creativity.
Was this your first time bringing like found footage into your books at all?
Let me think about that. Yes, this particular book started out as a short story that I wrote back in 2020, 2021, and I had put it on my website, and it exploded. Like, I was getting hundreds and hundreds of hits each month on it, and I was like, holy crap, I'm gonna make this into a book. So I took it off my website, and I started I guess about 6 to 8 months later, I started working on ideas of how to expand the characters and the narrative. Also added some more, a lot more violence and very, very disturbing scenes, especially the scene when the boys are getting the tapes and they dare one of the kids to look into Edgar Craddock's window. That scene is so messed up. Like, so messed up. So fans of like the visceral and disgusting and the disturbing are really going to like that scene.
Oh my God. I love it. All right. Since you mentioned it, let us talk about Old Man Craddock. Wait, hang on. Let me do that one again. Old Man Craddock. Who is this guy? What role does he play in the story?
Old Man Craddock, Edgar Craddock. Think of the meanest old bastard, and that's what the kids call him, the meanest old bastard that you have ever met in your life. Put him with these yellow infected teeth, this real pasty white skin where you can see the veins bulging out, an alcoholic gut, because he's a skinny man, but he's got that alcoholic gut on him because he carries a whiskey bottle with him wherever he goes. So just think of a guy who looks like a walking infection, just nasty. He's got balding hair, wispy white hair. He's got this real prominent brow with these piercing blue eyes and a very prominent nose. His skin, you know, is really tight, and you can see the sockets around his eyes and stuff like that. And Edgar Craddock, and he's going to come into play when I go back and do books and stories that take place before 1990, because he is a part of the Tetramet cult. He's one of the leaders. He's not the main leader. He's not the man in black, but he definitely plays a prominent role. But I wanted to introduce readers to Edgar Craddock as the old man, because he's a lot more entertaining as a mean, crotchety old man. Like, there are some great lines that people are going to laugh out loud, the dark humor of Edgar Craddock and just how totally crazy and sick and sadistic that he is. So there's not to give away much in the book, but there is a lot of mystery surrounding him, and has been. And the boys are talking about some of the stories that they've heard about Edgar Craddock, and they get the opportunity to find out what's on those tapes, and to see if they can find out more about, because they know Edgar Craddock's hiding something, right? Every creepy old man is hiding something.
Words to live by, kids. creepy old folks, they're hiding something every time.
And unfortunately for those five boys, they should have just left it alone, and they didn't.
In hindsight, probably the price is like just like gone back to like ball game and not really worried about what the old guy's chucking in the garbage. But oh man, all right, did you know an old man Craddock? Because it seems like you knew this dude.
I never knew anybody that vile.
Wow.
You know, you get, it was more, Edgar Craddock was more of like an amalgamation of things that I had seen in like very mean and cruel people. And so I kind of just put them all together in one person to make like just this great character for the story.
So from just listening to you talking about him, I'm thinking, you know this dude. You must have had an old man Craddock somewhere on your block when you were a kid, because you just really brought him to life right there.
Yeah. Like I said, bits and pieces of some people when I was younger and they were old that resembled aspects of it, but nobody embodying the full sickness and just pure meanness of Edgar Craddock.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. Then let's talk about what's on these tapes. I don't want to give anything away because this is, of course, read the book. You're going to want to check the scenes out. But give us a few hints to what they see on these tapes.
So on the tapes, you have one of them shows some actual occult activity going on around an altar. I'm not going to give it away, but fans of blood and gore are going to like that one. There's also one. So the whole urban legend around the Tetramet tapes is actually based on urban legends in my hometown of Central, Louisiana, that I grew up with at the end of the supposedly haunted road called Frenchtown Road, where there was supposedly people died back there. There were supposedly people killed by a cult. Lots of animal sacrifices going on back there. A supposed witch who lived at the end of the road. One of the scenes, you know, for just a trigger warning for people who do not like cruelty to animals, there is one of the tapes has something like that going on. But every single one of the videotapes takes place somewhere along Frenchtown Road, except for one of them. One of them goes back to a scene from way before the 90s, and it shows it. This one kind of has some stuff about Theodosia in it. And the other thing about the tapes is that there are short stories that I have on Godless that expound on what was on those tapes. So, for example, the Tetramet short story that I have on Godless expounds on one of the clips on the tape. And also my story, Call of the Tetramet, also expounds on one of the clips that is on the tapes as well. So that's how, you know, that's one instance how this universe connects. And it's in ways like that. It's not your typical ways. So if you want, if the people really want to know after they read the book or even before, like, you can get the Tetramet and Call of the Tetramet on Godless, part of the Southern Discomfort series. They're only 50 cents. And you can kind of read what you're in store for.
I love how you almost have these like spin-offs or like extensions of the main book. It's like, hey, you want to learn more about what happens here? Check this one out. Want to learn that one? Mm-hmm. Check this one out. Was that always kind of the plan to do all these extensions, or did it sort of happen?
No, it was a plan. Like I said, when I came up with this universe, I wanted to do something different than your regular type of series, where you release one book series and then another book series follows that and another follows that. And then, you know, a person hears about it three book series in and they're like, oh God, I got to go start all the way over. I didn't want that. I wanted it to be where somebody can pick up whatever story that is released or whatever book is released in the universe, and they can start there. And then they can go back and read and get more of the puzzle pieces. It's the same thing like with my Dreadful Death series. I'm working on the follow-up series of that right now called Abominations, and it's really going to highlight the character I was telling you, the Man in Black. But just because it takes place after the Dreadful Death series, the way that I did it, you don't have to read the Dreadful Death series to know what's going on, even though it takes place after it and it's got Theodosia's aftermath and the story and some of the same characters and stuff. The way that I did it, you know, you're not going to be lost. And that's what I wanted. That's how they all are.
That's so cool. I love this. How about, all right, going back a bit to the tapes that the kids find, is there one particular tape that you like the most that's like your favorite of all the different horror stories that are on these tapes?
Yeah, it's probably the one that is expounded on in the short story, The Tetramet. And I like this one. This one is my personal favorite because it is the very first Tetramet scene that I came up with and wrote down. And it really captures kind of the heart of the cult and what you see and just really how kind of sick and sadistic and twisted Theodosia is, because she's in that video clip as well. And so that one is by far has always been my favorite because it's what started the whole thing, the whole process.
Okay. You know, you talked earlier about how this was kind of a challenge to weave the found footage into your books. Did you have to make like a lot of tries before you said, okay, boom, we got it. This is it.
Yeah, it took several times before I felt like I had it the way that I wanted it. And you know, the problem too is like you want the reader to kind of feel a little bit of that choppiness, but you don't want them to be stumbling as they read. You still want it to be smooth in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I get you.
That was the challenge. How do I make it choppy feeling without making the reader feel like they're going and then they're smacking up against the wall each sentence with some of these changes? So that was the thing, is to still give it that feel without the reader having the feel on them that they're tripping just to try to get through this paragraph. They're tripping over the words and everything. So that required some work and some back and forth and a lot of reading out loud, see how it sounds and how it flows.
Okay. All right. I want to talk a little bit more about the kids. So we get these 5 12-year-old boys. Their leader is a kid named John Benson. Who are these kids? I mean, what are some different personas that we're introduced to as we go into the book?
Yep. So all of the characters are based off childhood friends of mine.
Oh my God, this got so much better.
So yeah, like there's a lot of personal connections in this. So John is the ringleader. He's definitely like Cool Hand Luke, man. He's not easily scared. He's level headed. He's a bit sarcastic, but he's got a big heart. Like John's got a big loving heart, which is why his friends flock to him. But he's also the badass of the group too. Like he can throw hands. He's a little bit bigger than the rest of the kids. So there's like this, they respect him for his stature and his physical abilities and how he's even protected some of them from bullies. But they also love him because he's got such a good, kind, and tender heart. Bill Chapman is John's best friend. And Bill is kind of the guy who at first, like, he doesn't really care about the stupid tapes. He's like, I've lived, because they're in Bill's neighborhood. This is where it happens. He's like, I live by this old man forever. Like, this is stupid. And so he's not really into it at first. He's got an older brother named Clint. And there's a scene in the book where Clint comes out and the boys tell him what happens. And Clint really lays into the boys about staying away, and he begins to share some of his stories. And so this was the first time Bill has heard it. But all throughout the story, Bill is the one who is kind of pushing against doing it, and he doesn't believe John about the urban legends and anything like that, and is saying, you know, he's making just these crazy connections. So Bill is kind of the skeptical one. Chase Dupie is like the goofy one. He's always saying stuff at the wrong time. He's always running his mouth and paying for it. He is a little bit, he's got some relief and stuff in there. And so he's like the funny kid of the group. He's the jokes. He's the one always cutting up. And then you have the Cumming brothers, Terry and Matt. Terry's 12, Matt is 10. And they're kind of the oddballs that just got accepted into the group because they live in Bill's neighborhood. But they rag the Cumming brothers all the time because of their last name, and call them the Sperm Brothers and everything like that.
So there's a
they're always, you know, ragging on them. You know what, you remember what it's like to be 12 years old.
Oh my God, yes, it sucked.
All that type of stuff and that humor, because everything's new and you're wanting to push the envelope with what you can say and get away with. So the Cumming brothers are just kind of like the kids who were bullied, the kids who are, you know, on the outside and were rejected and weren't popular and nobody liked them, but John and his friends took them in. And it's actually the Cumming brothers is one of they're the ones that John stood up for against their bullies. So they have that connection. Like Terry and Matt love John because of him taking up for them, and nobody had ever done that for them before. So those are kind of the different personalities, and there's some great chemistry in there between the characters with all those different personalities.
Yeah, yeah. And I think the fact that you base them all on friends of yours, that definitely makes a much stronger connection. So if one of those kids does happen to meet with a rather untimely end, you know, you're going to like make it count.
Yeah. Yeah. Definitely a lot of personal connections, which made it a lot easier to write the characters and the dialogue and everything like that. Cause it was just, you know, going back to my childhood and remembering how we all interacted together, and then putting that into these characters and, you know, ramping it up a little bit because it is fiction. But those honestly were probably the easiest characters I've ever written, because yeah, it was so personal.
Sure.
But it definitely shows in the writing and in the way that the characters interact well.
Okay. Now, this is far from your first story. You have a ton of stories out there right now. But did this one give you the chance to try anything new, with the exception of the found footage component?
This one was my first coming of age style horror.
Nice.
So, yeah. So my first found footage, first coming of age, because what I like to do, Max, is I like to write under every type of subgenre of horror. I mean, I've got it all. Like, I've got extreme all the way to the nonviolent, non-bloody psychological horror. I also have some children's horror as well. So it's kind of just everything under the sun I like to try my hand at. And you know, that's the other thing about the Tetramet universe, is each story is different. It's written in a different narrative style. It's written in a different type of subgenre of horror. Like, this one is coming of age found footage. The Dreadful Death series was a historical horror that focused on, it's like a mashup between The Exorcist, Hereditary, and then something out of Lovecraft. My story on Godless, Tetramet Rising, which one I haven't mentioned yet, it's really grimy and dirty. It takes place in the underbelly of Baton Rouge, and it's about this cop who is chasing down these pregnant women who are part of the cult, because there's something coming, and it's not what you think. It's not giving birth to an antichrist or a devil baby. It's something totally off the wall that these women are going to be giving birth to. And so that one's like real seedy. It's the kind like you want to maybe take a bath after you read it type.
The best kind of story.
Call of the Tetramet is pure folk horror. The Tetramet short story is got the feel of like an 80s B cult movie. So all of them are different. And I did that for a reason too, because you got all types of horror fans. And, you know, some people read the series and they like one better than the other. And it's just, that's the way it's supposed to be. Because some people are going to like the cult horror better. Some people are going to like the possession. Some people are going to like this found footage coming of age. There's just something out there for everybody in this series.
I like that. I like that. All right, folks, we are coming down to the end of this conversation, but I've got a few more questions before we go. Let's talk about Godless, because as you mentioned, pretty much all your stuff's out on Godless. Who are the folks at Godless, and how'd you get to working with them?
So Drew Stepik created Godless about 3 years ago as a way to really highlight and promote indie horror authors. And it's it's all ebook platforms. I have to mention that because some people get on there thinking that you're going to get paperbacks and they're like, oh, a paperback for 50 cents. No. It's all ebook. And so he did this as a way for indie horror writers to promote their work. And he does a great job of promoting and stuff. And I had put a story on there back at the December 2022 called Night of the Blood Come. About this, it's a redneck style trailer trash horror story about this satanic sperm monster.
Oh my god!
And so after that, several months later, Drew approached me and he was like, "Hey man, how about you do a monthly series for us?" And I said, "Heck yeah, man!" I said, "I'd love to do that." And you know, so I came up with the title Southern Discomfort, me being a Southern boy down here in Louisiana, and we're on the second year of it now. So issue 4 for season 2 drops. They all come out at the 7th of the month, and so issue 4 drops April 7th, and that story is called Bone Box.
I love that title. That's so cool. That's so cool. All right. Now, of course, this wouldn't be the same if I did not ask about the cover, because we have seen some epic covers over the years of doing this show. We love the cover for this book. How did that one come together?
So Ash Eric Moore did the cover. Ash Eric Moore is a fantastic writer and cover artist. One of the found footage horror movies that I like is called Deadstream. It's on Shudder. Not sure if you've seen that one, but I absolutely love the cover of Deadstream because it has like the demon hand holding the camera. And like I had tried a cover at first of just like a, you know, that looked like a VHS tape, and it didn't capture the darkness of the story. So I told Dawn, the publisher at D&T Publishing, I was like, okay, I've got it. I was like, this is what I want. Sent her a picture of Deadstream, and I said something like this. I said, I want a demonic hand holding a camera coming out of the woods, because the story takes place in the end in the woods. And Ash did that cover, and he sent it to me, and my jaw hit the floor. I mean, it was one of my favorite covers ever that I've had done. It's absolutely fantastic.
Yeah. I mean, Curtis and I, when we were like looking this thing over, we're like, we love the cover, especially all like the smaller details. Like, of course, you get the monster hand holding the camera, but you get the woods in the background with like this green tint to it. We were just like loving it. Absolutely loving it. All right. Well, folks, this is it. We're at the end. Couldn't believe it, but here we are. Ezekiel, as always, man, a true pleasure speaking to you. Folks, if you're hearing all this, you want to get the book. It's called The Tetramet Tapes. You get it on Godless, of course, Amazon. But where do folks go, of course, to learn about your work, Ezekiel, and find out more stuff about you?
I have my Amazon page, just Ezekiel Kincaid. I also have a Southern Discomfort website that I post stuff about my writings on there and paranormal stuff. It's just Ezekiel Kincaid at WordPress. So that's my WordPress site. But I also have another author site with my books on there. It's called The Paranormal Pastor. So The Paranormal Pastor, it's a Squarespace site. So The Paranormal Pastor at Squarespace. Two main sites that I use, but I'm on TikTok, Twitter, and Instagram. All of it is just at Ezekiel Kincaid. Just made it simple.
I have got to check out your TikTok, sir. I did not know you were on TikTok. This is changing my life already.
Yeah, I'm on there, man. Do a mixture of stuff. I do horror stuff. I'm starting to do some more paranormal stuff. I'm a pastor as well, so I've got a lot of stuff that I do about certain verses that I'm preaching and teaching on and stuff like that. So it's like a mad mixture of horror, paranormal, and spirituality.
It works though, right? It works.
For me, it works.
I like that. Oh, and of course, before we go, what's next? What can folks look forward to down the road?
I am about to submit another Tetramet book to D&T Publishing in May. This is the Abominations series I was telling you about earlier. So that one is what I just finished up. I have another book I'm trying to find a publisher for called The Gospel of Lilith. It's a horror fantasy, and it's the origin story of the Tetramet, how he came to be. Ooh. So those are some of the things I've got in the fire. Of course, I've got all kinds of different stories. Bone Box is coming up. I also have another story that I'll be doing for Southern Discomfort called New Orleans Style Pizza. It's a body horror, takes place in New Orleans. So that's a... And of course, I've got this children's book that I'm going to be submitting to D&T Publishing too. It's called D Minor. It's about a haunted piano found in the middle of the woods.
So seems okay to do, right? Just play the piano. It's fine, you know? It's no big deal. Everything's okay.
Yeah, I mean, not odd at all.
Exactly, exactly. Well, Ezekiel, man, as always, a true pleasure talking to you. I've loved hearing about this book. I'm going to get my copy real soon. And we'll be doing this again real soon, and definitely looking forward to that conversation.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Max.
Enjoying the podcast? Get even more of the content you love from artists around the world on Citywide Bites. Experience the show live on Saturdays at 10 a.m. Eastern, only on Instagram. With our interactive short-form interview series, you can ask your questions and be a part of the action. Hosted by Max Bowen.
And with that, we bring this episode to a close. Thanks for listening. And if you haven't already, check us out on Facebook under Citywide Blackout and Twitter and Instagram under Citywide Max. You can catch this and all your favorite episodes on your favorite podcast platform. And new episodes are added every week, as well as on Boston Free Radio every Saturday at 10 p.m. You get at me at citywidemax@yahoo.com if you want us just a guest, submit your music, or just drop us a line. Thanks for tuning in, and I'll see you next time.